We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a notice from the Oliver Church Parish magazine, read by Harriet Cass.
On Thursday at 5 p.m, there'll be a meeting of the Little Mothers Club. All wishing to become Little Mothers, please see the minister in his study.
Thanks to Grace Wesson for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Please welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Steve Punt. Opposite them, Alan Corran and Linda Smith. Andy, who thinks the Terribles terrible?
Well, what a strange, topsy-turvy Alice in Wonderland world we now inhabit, where our best hope of softening extreme draconian laws is Michael Howard. When they see that in history books in the future, they go, it's a typo. It can't be right. Because, of course, Michael Howard has been trying to oppose the passage of the government's new terror laws. Actually, that's a bit confusing, isn't it, calling it a law? Because if you're talking about a situation where somebody could be imprisoned in their own home and not know what they're charged with, not know what the evidence is, not know whether they're ever going to be taken to trial, I mean, that's not actually a law, is it? It's a novel by Kafka, if you think about it. Anyway, Michael Howard has been opposing it. He's taken time out from his very hectic schedule, where he's been going around the nation's hospitals dislocating old ladies' shoulders. He's been trying to get these new anti-terror laws to expire by November with what's called a sunset clause, which sounds a bit like it. Sunset clause to me sounds like a euphemism for a senile Father Christmas. But we should, I mean, it is extraordinary that you find yourself thinking that you hope Michael Howard succeeds, because, I mean, giving a Home Secretary such sweeping powers, I mean, I've got nothing against Giles Clarke, he seems an amiable enough bloke, but he's not going to be Home Secretary forever, is he, with these sweeping powers? I mean, what if in 5 years' time Robert Kilroy Silk might be Home Secretary?
I hate to say this, but the idea that Charles Clarke isn't going to be Home Secretary forever, you clearly haven't read the details of the bill.
Am I alone?
Almost certainly.
But Andy, we all are, really.
Yes, yes.
I mean, we laugh, we have a few jokes, I mean, this is very pleasant, but we're all very deeply alone.
Yeah. You certainly will be when Charles Clarke puts you in solitary confinement.
But am I alone in having a particular intense dislike for this new character who's emerging on the government front benches? I think she's at the Home Office, called Hazel Blears.
Hazel
Blears. She's very scary.
Sounds so made up.
Yeah. Sounds like a sort of biscuit.
Yeah. She comes on, she's extremely patronising. I mean, even on the sort of Virginia Bottomley scale, she's way off that scale. And I first noticed that when the government was talking about passing laws which would forbid jokes about religion, she came on and she said, well, you know, I understand about writers. She said, these wordsmiths, they're very precious about their words, these wordsmiths. But I think what we're saying to these wordsmiths is that, you know, they have to be a bit more responsible about the words that these wordsmiths use. And I sat there and I think,
when they're smithying their words.
And I was thinking, you're a politician. I don't call you a bollocksmith, do I?
It's the government's controversial prevention of terrorism bill, which, even as we record this edition of the news quiz, is ping-ponging its way between the Lords and the Commons. PM told members of Parliament that his government was receiving new intelligence every day, and at this rate, John Prescott will know the whole alphabet by 2007. Steve, who's gone public about private education?
Well, in the course of the pre-election election that's been happening, in which we're whizzing through the election agenda, we've already done immigration and we've already done the economy, and we've moved on to education this week. And
correct.
The Tories came out with some ideas about education. They believe in a traditional education. They approve of the sort of schools where rugby is refereed in Latin and, you know, history focuses on great British victories of the past, you know, Agincourt, Waterloo, Trafalgar, Bucks Fizz in 1981, Brotherhood of Man in... 76, I remember doing for A-level, and...
I think there was some mention of political correctness. There usually is, isn't there?
There was some mention of it. There always is from Michael Howard when he's not dislocating old lady's shoulders.
As he likes to call pupils children of the night.
He does. He dislocates their shoulders and then asks what is the name of the two bones that he's just separated.
Who was that poor woman who used to do education for New Level? Estelle Morris, wasn't it?
Oh,
I felt sorry for her. She always looked like the ghost of a Victorian chimney sweep.
But she resigned because she said she knew she wasn't up to the job, didn't she?
And she should be sailing around the world, shouldn't she? Really going, I can't do it. I'm just not good enough. I'm so tired. It's exhausting.
This week, the Conservatives unveiled their education policy and promised a return to traditional teaching. The Tories are concerned that teachers are spending far too much time on paperwork, though, to be fair, most of the paperwork they do is applying for other jobs. Linda, who's been making liberal promises about the election?
Liberal Democrats.
Could be.
Yep. Had a bit of a conference recently. Charles Kennedy, in fighting mood, foresees a good time for the Lib Dems in the forthcoming election. However, made a few false moves lately, really, because they've been opposing the anti-terror moves. And there was a parliamentary vote on this very subject, but unfortunately just got through because 17 of them didn't turn up to vote. Doesn't bode well, really, but it is your classic shambolic liberal democracy. It's marvellous, isn't it? It's like, no, we couldn't really get there because I had my Pilates and Ben had promised to do the nibbles for book club and then, you know, it always falls to Audrey and she is a treasure, but it's not fair, really. And Charles had antenatal classes, so really it was... So, yes, they're in good form.
What was his excuse for not turning up?
Yeah, he'd been snatched away and put in Belmarsh and he was never told why.
That's the dim and distant days when Callaghan was fighting for survival and there was that poor MP who was at death's door. Do you remember? And they kept dragging him in.
Wheeling him in, and that was like an episode of ER.
He was the crucial vote. It seems to me that kind of dedication is perhaps missing these days.
That passion, do you?
No.
That fire in your belly, really. Largely due to medication.
I remember
but,
that.
Yes, the chief whip of the Liberal Democrats. It's more a sort of, well, if anyone can make it.
Do you think after the result came in and they realised that actually they could have carried the vote? I wonder what sort of...
I think it was more a sort of, oh, it's so easily done, isn't it? Oh, God. Oh,
signed away the liberties of our citizens.
Oh,
there,
what are we like?
At the party conference last weekend, the Liberal Democrats put the defence of civil liberties at the heart of their election campaign. They boasted that they will win the seats of four leading Tories under what they call the decapitation strategy, which also happens to be the name of the new legislation about to be brought forward by Charles Clarke. Alan, listen to this.
I could be the catalyst that sparks the revolution. I could be an inmate in a long-term institution. I could be the wild extremes, I could do or die. I could yawn and be withdrawn and watch them gather fire. What a waste. What a waste.
Alan, what do politicians have to fear from our idle youth?
Well, I mean, it's terrible being fourth in hand in the political round because, you know, the three major parties are going to be mopped up by your learned partners. And I always get UKIP or Plaid Cymru, and it's very hard answering in Welsh. There's all those W's and L's you've got to get your tongue round. I think this is about the fact that young people would rather vote for Big Brother and Pop Idol than Charles Kennedy. This is something I find hard to understand. It's one of those terrible ironies of English, the English cultural moment, that we've educated all these people to become too educated and too intelligent to take any of these people seriously. So they just say, I'm going to go and vote for Robbie Williams again, or that woman with the big ooters who eats caterpillars. You know, who is polled in this YouGov poll? Is it cab drivers? I've often wondered what YouGov was. Is it people who just don't go... It's... you say, who would you like to vote for? I'm sorry, if that's south of the river, I'm not voting for it. Who are... I mean, I understand Morrie. I mean, he used to be my tailor. But I don't know who YouGov is.
A YouGov poll of first-time voters in the Daily Telegraph reveals that more young people voted in Pop Idol than intend to vote in the next general election. The majority of first-time voters think mothers should stay at home to look after their children, provided it doesn't interfere with their schoolwork. At the end of round one, the scores are everybody has 4 points. And we start round two with a TV listing from the Daily Mirror.
8 o'clock, you are what you eat. Dr. Gillian McKeith helps a 22-stone closet eater.
Thanks to George Shearer of Edmonton for sending that in. Andy, who's been given the stamp of approval?
Oh, this is Her Majesty's wedding present to Charles and Camilla. She obviously feels a bit guilty about not going to the wedding, so she's trying to make it up with him. She's given him a stamp. I think I've worked out why she's not going to the wedding, and that is that she just doesn't trust herself to go. You know, because it'd be one of those family weddings where she has a few drinks. You know, the truth comes out, and before you know it, she's decking the bride.
Or the sword comes out and she's just knighting people at random.
Yeah. I was slightly uncomfortable because it shows him in his waistcoat with his watch and chain, like something out of any old iron, with his beloved. And it's a 68p stamp. I thought, how lucky it's not a 69p stamp.
The Royal Mail has produced 2 stamps to commemorate the wedding of Charles and Camilla. The stamps are expected to be popular with Republicans, who will now be able to send Charles and Camilla far, far away for only 30p. Steve, how did Paris in the springtime fail to strike the right note?
Oh, Paris and London are the two favourites to stage the 2012 Olympics, and UKIP have probably scuttled London's bid by... They don't want the Olympics here because all the events are metric. And which has meant that it probably will go to Paris. But despite all this, Paris has messed its bid up in a very French way, actually, because whereas everyone thought that the tubes would go on strike here, they didn't. People mucked in, it was the Blitz spirit, whereas when the French say they're going to strike, they really do. And they really have. It was out, toot out. And one language scholar...
Does that come carry on, don't get the Olympics?
This isn't very patriotic. We shouldn't do any jokes in case we jeopardise London's bid. We really shouldn't.
Well, I hope we don't get it. I mean, just to get a bit of regeneration, we all have to pretend we're interested in clay pigeon shooting. Get out of it. And anyway, for the athletes, what would you prefer? I mean, I live in East London, I love it, but, well, Paris on the one hand or Stratford Sidings?
You see, that's jeopardised the bid, Linda. I'm sorry. You've probably cost it for us, actually. That's probably going to swing it with you. The IOC, they're going to look at everything. They're going to say, right, facilities, infrastructure, stadiums, Linda Smith.
But I will have pleased my Parisian paymasters.
The visit of the International Olympic Committee to Paris coincided with a week of nationwide strikes. The bid for the 2012 Olympics is set to be a two-horse race between London and Paris, an event that will hopefully replace show jumping in all future games. Linda, listen to this.
Alan, get out of that mosh pit and stop gobbing at the audience, will you?
Linda, who's claiming the credit for a peaceful clash of democracy?
Well, this is the spread of democracy across the Middle East, like avian flu. It's going from one country to the next. I think it's a bit much if George Bush is the one who's claiming responsibility for this outbreak of democracy. It'd be a bit like Jim Davidson, the greatest comedian of the 21st century. For spreading laughter throughout the world.
I want to know what happened to the Near East. When I was young, there was a Near East and there was a Middle East. And the Near East seems to have disappeared.
The
I know
Near
what the Far East is. I know what the Middle East is.
Well, it's you're getting old, you're getting disorientated, Alan. That's what I want to know is if
I'm
they're going
to have coloured in a picture of it at one time in my school career. That's the annoying thing with all its little products.
Yeah, listed its
exports. I wonder what it's bound to have been maize. It always was.
You only needed a red pencil to colour in when I was young.
See what I mean?
This week, George Bush portrayed the anti-Syrian protests in Beirut as a decisive moment for the spread of freedom across the Middle East. Some Middle Eastern countries have embraced democracy so wholeheartedly, they've even given up the idea of indefinite house arrest. Alan, where will men and women be getting together behind bars?
Chokey.
Yes.
Peterborough Jail, where the women are going to cook. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. I'm going to drive home too fast and park on three yellow lines. I should be in Peterborough by tomorrow morning. With my feet up and a big fascist woman making me eggs and bacon. It's wonderful. They're taking this lesson from mixed wards in hospitals and they're having mixed prisons.
So you're fantasising about going to Peterborough Jail and being some large woman's bitch?
No, all right, a large bloke. Yes, yes. I think you have to use the word hoe under those circumstances. I've understood from my street knowledge. Yeah, I mean, it's Peterborough Chokey. Mm-hmm. Poor old Archer, he just missed out, didn't he? They sprang it.
Her Majesty's Prison, Peterborough, is Britain's first prison to accommodate both male and female prisoners in over 100 years. With even prisons going unisex, soon the only male-only institutions will be the Freemasons, the Garrick Club, and all-girl internet chat rooms. Officials say they were glad to close down HMP Weir, the country's last remaining prison ship. It had only 1 year left on its seaworthiness certificate, due mainly to the fact that three prisoners had tried to tunnel their way to freedom. And at the end of round two, everybody has 8 points. And before we start round three, here's an advert from the Salisbury Journal.
The new Audi A4 Avant, a unique composition, now at your local Audi centre. Wheels available at no extra cost.
Thanks to many people who sent that in. Andy, why is the body beautiful becoming baby talk?
Steve.
Andy. Well, actually, I think I do know this.
Yes.
Apparently, 5-year-olds are worried about their weight.
Mm-hmm.
And if you watch Jamie's school dinners, you can see that they're right to be worried. But it's rather frightening. There are 5-year-old girls who are apparently on diets and having, you know, one less turkey Twizzler than normal.
Do you think turkey Twizzlers could become a weapon of mass destruction?
But on the other hand, turkey Twizzlers is a better name than Hazel Blair's.
Turkey Twizzlers, a rising Blair babe, actually, turkey Twizzlers. What evil, rancid, godforsaken brain came up with the idea of...
Hazel Blair.
...getting...
I was wondering about the trade-off with Jamie Oliver, because I watch this programme, and you're going to have these very slim, fit kids who've been brought up by Jamie Oliver, but none of them is going to be able to speak English. They're all going to be eating broccoli and polenta, talking like that.
He can't help that, because his tongue
doesn't...
he's got the wrong tongue. It just doesn't go in. It's just flapping about like a haddock. Not quite dead, and a poor lad. I think he's done well with that disability, actually.
A study carried out at Flinders University, Southern Australia, has revealed that girls as young as 5 are unhappy with their bodies and want to be thinner. Kids as young as 8 are starting to request cosmetic surgery, though to be fair, most of them just want an extra finger on each hand so they can text faster. So we move on to Steve. Listen to this.
Walk like an Egyptian. Walk like an Egyptian.
Steve, whose unlucky break was nothing to tut at?
Ah, yeah, it's Tutankhamun, as he used to be called when I was a child, but Tutankhamun, as we now have to call him. There's been a conspiracy theory for a long time, mainly put about by Channel 5, who only have 2 documentaries, one of which is called Hitler's Pole Dancers in Colour.
I find you can get a good cross-section of those documentaries on UK Nazi Gold.
And the other one is about, all the conspiracy theories about ancient Egypt, which they're very keen on, you know, ancient Egypt was this weird place and they had pyramids and, you know, they were built by aliens because there are also pyramids on the other side of the Atlantic in Mexico and all that means that they must share common ancestors of the people of Atlantis who migrated to either side and, you know, it never seems to occur to them that it may also be because any other way of putting stones on top of each other falls over.
But,
No, there's been this conspiracy theory that Tutankhamun was assassinated by a man on the fifth floor of the National Scroll Depository. But they've worked out rather boringly now that this isn't true. And in fact, he died because he had a gammy leg. He had broken his leg or something and didn't heal properly. And then to make it even worse, Michael Howard turned up and dragged him down to Westminster. Made him do a photo call. So, yeah, as usual, the conspiracy theory has turned out to be very wide of the mark. And it turns out the poor lad died at 18 of a broken leg.
But do you not think, though, that he might have had a better chance if he hadn't waited 3,000 years for that CT scan? I'm surprised Michael Howard didn't make more of that.
Also, they bandaged the leg and went a bit over the top. And, yeah. You know.
I think they probably gave him a DVT as well, I think. They need to slacken that off. But they said that he probably broke his leg lion hunting. Well, how do you work that out from an X-ray? Is there a big lion claw in there? Or?
Of course, the interesting thing is that in ancient Egypt, the CAT scan was sacred.
A CAT scan of the mummified body of the boy king Tutankhamun has revealed that far from being murdered, as some thought, the 19-year-old probably died from an infected broken leg. Team leader Dr. Zahi Hawass claimed that King's death was due to primitive medical treatment and lack of hygiene knowledge. Dr. John Reid blamed it on 18 years of Tory cuts. Many candidates have been put forward as Tutankhamun's murderers, including his vizier Ai, his queen, and the many aggrieved victims of his notorious pyramid-selling scheme. Linda, anyone fancy a third?
Oh, yeah, a third. The organisation to encourage women drinking beer have come up with this idea that it might be more attractive to women if you served, instead of a pint, they got a third of a pint, and they got it in a sort of wine glass type affair. What, when I was a student in Sheffield, used to be called a lady's glass. A woman, if you went up to the bar and said, "Can I have a half a bitter, please?" And they'd say, "Is it for you, love?" And you say, "Yes." And they say, "You'll want it in a lady's glass." Which was like a normal glass, only it had a doily underneath. Some smelling salts on the side in case it was all a bit too much for you. So this is the idea now, that you prefer a third of a pint. You prefer it to... I mean, that is not a drink. That is homeopathy. This sort of great upsurge in binge drinking, mm-hmm. How can there correspondingly be a decline in bid? Or are all these sort of out of control teenagers, are they all drinking an interesting little mm-hmm. bone wine or something by the gallon? I don't believe that, do you?
I do. I mean, they drink all the bizarre things with Irish names, where they've got sugar in them. And, you know.
What, the Bacardi O'Breezer?
Yeah.
£1 million campaign called Beautiful Beer proposes thirds instead of halves or full pints for women, as well as offering wine glass styled glasses to give beer a sophisticated look. Wine has overtaken beer as the nation's favourite tipple, but having overtaken it was breathalysed and had its licence revoked. Alan, why is your health no longer a serious matter?
I think it's this myth, to which we are all testament here today, that a laughing makes you feel better and live longer. Apparently 15 minutes of laughter. This is really all to do with the hospital service being so terrible. Of course it's better to listen to the news quiz, because nobody here will give you DVT or MRSA or an enema with a bent sword. And some survey, probably by Americans, have discovered that if you laugh, it's very good for the heart. You go ha ha ha, and you get better. But if you go and see frightening movies, you die. They're very bad for you, horror movies. What you basically want is belly laugh on Elm Street, or you won't or you'll not get through the night.
Yes, they say laughter is the best medicine, but that's not true if you've got facial injuries. Quite a nasty setback.
New medical research proves that laughter is the best medicine. Researchers from the University of Maryland School of Medicine compared the effect of watching funny films and stressful films. The funny films were Woody Allen's early movies. The stressful ones were Woody Allen's later movies. Apparently, laughter increases blood flow by 22%, whereas stress decreases blood flow by 35%. Michael Howard makes blood disappear completely. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
This is from Tim Flynn from Hastings, and it is a final electricity bill from Seaboard Energy. It says, please pay £0.04. And the address it's been sent to is The Occupier Portable Toilet, Union Street, Rochester.
There's a piece from an interview in The Independent with a psychologist, which it says, Anne Cook, 42, works as a consultant clinical psychologist. The best and worst parts of the job are very similar, she says. People sometimes kill themselves, which is very hard, but the good thing is that you're often able to help.
Linda.
Ah, oh, thanks to Kevin Buchanan, who sent this in from the Leicester Mercury. A man has been left baffled after intruders sneaked into his home and put down new linoleum flooring. Computer programmer Matt Harris, who rents his home, is desperate to find out who carried out the botched DIY job in his kitchen while he was out. Someone got in and fitted lino in the kitchen. It was the worst job I've ever seen. The lino had just been cut out around the appliances. I can't take it up again because it's stuck down with nasty glue onto the original flooring. I reported it to the police, but they said no crime has been committed. I'm aghast that it seems to be acceptable for someone to come into your house and fit lino.
Alan. Well, Simon, I was quite taken with this from Wednesday's Daily Express. It says, dashing television presenter Ben Fogel is bidding to become the first man to row the Atlantic naked. Asked what the effects on his body might be of the extreme cold, he said that it was unlikely to be a big thing.
Thank you all. Let's look at the final scores, and they're completely level with everyone scoring 16. And before we leave you, here's a piece of advice from the ATCO Power Mower Manual sent in by William Freer.
A spanner around the nuts occasionally is a very worthwhile precaution.
Goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Steve Hunt, Linda Smith and Alan Corrin. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Harriet Cass. The chairman's script was written by George Poles, Simon Littlefield, Lucy Clark, Paul Carenza and Rodri Crooks. And the producer was Katie Tyrrell.